All right, well, good morning. Hopefully you guys have managed to recover from travel, late nights, all the good things that happen at tech vendor events, especially Tech Ed. If you're like me, it's the second day that you wake up and you feel like a bag of smashed apples. I believe that passes with time. But today you're here for a session on unlocking your core cal with Link. And trying to be respectful and understanding of the fact that time is precious, your energy even more so, if you even have some still this morning. I want to be clear about what this session is going to cover. So my name, just so you know, it's up here, Mark Perez. I am a consultant, solution architect within Microsoft, and working a lot with Link in Exchange, principally now with Link. And with his predecessor, OCS, prior to that. I do think that in consulting, one of the most important things you learn is you set expectations early and often, all right? So one of the things that, not to break our wonderful trust relationship here that you came in here with, and we have a great synergy, but it seems that at some point in the days prior, a description of this session was posted that had something to do with the effect of a Cisco interop compete deep dive voice analysis and case study materials. I don't know who wrote that, and I honestly wouldn't have them, actually I probably would have them stand up and, you know, be abused and we could throw things at them, except that I will try to be professional and I also don't know who to blame, principally. But today, what I want us to talk about has something to do with Link Core Cal. I'm not a licensing expert, so this is not going to be a session on licensing. What we are going to cover is, at a high level, what is the Link Core Cal? What do you get with Core Cal? So if you're somebody who owns or is considering Core Cal, what are those features there that you're going to receive? Now, that's about the level that we're going to cover. So some folks who have come to the expert booth there for Link have had a few questions. What is Link? How does it work? That's been the minority. I think the majority of folks actually know something about Link. So I'm going to give just a few slides to cover some of the functionality that is there in Core Cal, because some of you know Link does things like enterprise voice, telephony over the PSTN, the public switch network. So Core Cal is a little bit different. We're going to make sure that you understand the distinction. And then what we're going to spend the bulk of the time doing is driving actually into, well, how do you get there, right? What is it like to deploy Link? And I'm actually going to attempt a Link deployment here in your presence. And so this could be exactly right. You clap. This will either be fun or funny. And, you know, we're shooting for the former, but it is what it is. One person already left, I don't take it personally. If I do, there's a guy who kind of acts as our Dr. Phil moment if we have to work through anything post a session. So feel free if this is not what you signed up for. We will get into some of the bits and bytes about the deployment process, particularly as it relates to AD. There are distinctions between our previous versions and Link, particularly that the product does not rely upon Active Directory in quite the same way that it used to before. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what happens in the background in a Link deployment. For those of you that love to have a coding hand and a more deliberate touch onto each aspect of the process, there'll be something for you there. And then we're going to step through the actual deployment using some of the tools that are there that we believe helps Link get into the environment in a much smoother and faster way. So starting here with our objectives and takeaways, again, we're going to overview the standard and core Cal. I'll explain to you why those two fit together if you don't already know. We'll do cover an understanding of the native functions and the interop. Also across Office and SharePoint. Key value here, because if you have Core Cal, you probably are running Exchange and you're probably running SharePoint. The fact that Link natively lights these things up, you don't download feature packs, you don't write and run integration code, but the fact that that Link as a client can be aware of the presence of Exchange web services, that there is a service connection point in Active Directory so that when people are on Link, they can see things in SharePoint and vice versa. I think that that's very valuable for you to understand that that's just there in the product. And then we're going to do that overview of the setup and deployment process. So starting with the overview here, Link Standard Cal. First, obviously, out of the bat, there's rich presence. And so that comes in a few forms, right? We're talking about the traditional buddy list view with real-time status. but the integrated presence across the Office application. So that means if you are taking a look at a SharePoint My site, and it is a team site, and there are people who have Link and you have Link, as part of this CoreCal suite and standard, you're able to actually see their presence in the site as you're working on a document. Incredibly valuable because it speeds up the collaborative process. Part of what's also in the Link standard Cal, of course, is instant messaging. But that's kind of a given, right? But what I'd like to point out is a few things that you may not know. One, in standard Cal, instant messaging comes in a few forms. There is the basic link-to-link instant messaging function. There's also group chat, where you have a distinct use case around something that resembles chat rooms, right? Very much is chat rooms. And so you have a historical session going, a different type of client. It sounds like another product. It sounds like another feature set. It's actually there as part of Link standard. Additionally, is instant messaging across federated partners. So we're talking about public IM connectivity, as well as partners that you federate with. Specifically for public IM, AOL, Yahoo, MSN. So in these particular cases, you are able to IM with basically just the standard CAL. So if you deploy an edge server, as we'll talk about here, you'll have the opportunity to engage in some sort of dialogue there collaboratively. Conference attendee services. You can join Link-hosted conferences with standard CAL. There's a few different ways to do that, right? You can use the Link client. We also have a free client that's a download. It's called the Link Attendee Client. Not to be confused with the attendant console, right? Because how could you? The first six letters are exactly the same. But the Attendee Console is a rich client download where there's actually software on the desktop and someone's actually able to join and engage the PC audio and perhaps video to be able to see PSOM, the desktop sharing. So it's a great value for somebody to consume that. Obviously, you can do the same thing with your Link client as well. So if you've been invited to a conference that's been hosted on-premise, you can absolutely consume video and audio through Link, which obviously brings up AV communications, right? So standard CAL would be a little bit of a letdown if there was no AV at all. In standard CAL, there is. Right, so what that means is you've got the ability to initiate peer-to-peer audio and video calls with co-workers. We'll see a couple of springboard shots from that here in the deck. Obviously, that applies to people who are connected remotely via Edge, so not necessarily VPN, because Link, we like to think, does not require that VPN connection. You're able to use remote access via the Edge to get a secure SIP connection back to the network. So it's great in that regard. You can even do AV, audio video, for a live messenger. I don't know if you've ever tested that, but Link and people who are on Hotmail and have a live messenger client, you can start an audio-video session there as well, and obviously with all federated partners. So this is standard CAL, and I'm going to go through these relatively quickly and just look for really confused faces that I'm not hopefully mistaking confusion and fatigue. But we think rich presence improves productivity simply because you are able to initiate a collaborative effort, a communication based on some facts. This person is available, they are not available. You also have control of it. You can appear away, a very popular status, right? It's the deceptive status. Hey, you know, I'm here, but I'm not here. I don't really want to talk to you. You could just sign out, appear away, basically says, I look like I'm away, but I might bother you. That's kind of what that setting is for. And then you have the ability to learn a little bit more about what's going on from folks within the organization in the contact card, all the way there on the right. One of the things you'll notice is down at the calendar entry, it's the second from the bottom, you've got, hey, free until 5 p.m. That's not because there's a calendar that's kept separately in Link. That's because Link is aware of Exchange and can talk via the web service and get some free busy data. So that is a native level of integration that's there in the Link client's part of standard. So we think that that's a huge value add for rich presence. It's not simply, hang on just a second. It's not simply, hey, there's a bit of calendaring here that you have to add in, code that you need to write. You had a question?
Calendar shows busy. Busy.
Correct. So if somebody is in a meeting, their status will actually change. So if we come over here and look in the center, so thank you, helping me understand where I want to make sure I'm answering and all the questions and speaking to the audiences that are here, because I understand it's very diverse. We'll all have to be patient. In the center, you're going to see at the top that there's several statuses. There's the green, which is available, red for busy. That busy does not have to be set manually, right? So if you are in a meeting in Exchange and your calendar, your Outlook says, hey, I'm in a meeting, your status will change to busy if that meeting is set to show my status is busy. Do not disturb, that's one of those that's not automatically triggered. You would have to manually set yourself to be to do not disturb. This has a little bit to do with some policies. People may or may not be able to IM you based on their categorization in your contact group. So in other words, you don't want people, the general population, to contact you, but certain folks, spouse or a manager certainly perhaps could. And then we have off work and appear away. Those are manual status changes, but available, busy, with the clarification in a meeting or on a call. We'll see that as well. That is happens automatically within the client. So rich presence in familiar apps of here, a little bit to that. Now, granted, these folks are showing mostly available except for Sean there. You can see in the email itself for Fabricam, incredibly popular company known for not really existing at all. The red Sean Chai shows, obviously this person's busy. So of the folks in the email thread, you're looking at Outlook. We're not looking at a link contact card. We're not looking at the link client. And that's part of what we see as the unified communication story. It'd be very difficult to sell a unified communication platform if it only worked on one client. For us, it doesn't matter which client you're looking at. You're going to see the presence, and you'll notice because someone has highlighted Terry Adams, we have some options below his photo there. You're going to see the envelope if you wanted to initiate an email. I'm talking about the photo card that's popped up there. It's both are the same sort of State Farm agent-looking photo. But the first icon that's below his photo is an envelope if you want to initiate an email. The second to the right is a dialog box if you wanted to initiate an IM conversation. Next to that's phone icon if you'd like to initiate a phone call to this individual. So those are some things that are link-centric, the chat, the phone call, that's link function, but you're springboarding from Outlook. SharePoint. SharePoint's presented here. Here's a my site, and we're going to see clearly that there are folks who have presence available right there on the SharePoint site. Within a document, if you're working on a document and the authors are online, whether they're busy or available, you'll see their status. So rather than set up a call, set up a meeting to talk about this thing in the document, you can see real-time, hey, Jeff wrote this document. I have some questions, Jeff. This doesn't look right. Let me just chat him or call him now. And you're able to do that. And then custom applications. I won't go deep into any sort of development materials here because that's not the scope of this, and I have no expertise in development whatsoever. But custom applications are absolutely possible with our SIP programming language, and we do have some extensibility here within the Link platform. So we have many customers who've been able to develop either web pages or our bots that have leveraged the Link core functionality to make presence and accessibility of their staff much greater than just the Link client itself. So it's a huge value. Instant messaging, we have it across a bunch of platforms here. We're talking about Link for Mac, Link Web App, which is a browser-based Link experience for anyone who has Silverlight. We have Link Mobile for Windows Mobile, iPhone, iPad, Android. So we're talking about presence and IM that's available not just on a PC. And then there's a group chat client that I've referenced before. I don't want to go too deep into this, but on the left you have distinct chat rooms, and users either are or are not members of these chat rooms. So they're able to join into these chat rooms and have an experience with persistent chat. So if they leave the chat room, they come back, anything that's been said is still there. The text is still accessible to them. Conference attendee services. So you can have the Link client or the attendee client. As I mentioned, it's a free download if you've never seen it. I don't want to spend too much time on it simply because it's there for you to try and to see if you do not have Link already. Just understand it's very similar to the Link client, except that it's not a place where you can schedule meetings, but you can join and consume them. AV media communication. For standard Cal, this scenario is absolutely supported. So Paul initiates a conversation. It's a little bit of an awkward one. He's got some social dysfunction. He starts off by saying, hi, I'm going to give you a call. He could have just called, I suppose. But Brett tries to head it off and say, hey, did you get my report? Doesn't matter. The phone rung. He had to answer it. Now he's in a phone call with Paul. That's just the kind of guy Paul is. So here we see that the status has changed for Brought to in a call. So he's not just read, he's busy. Link actually says, no, he's in a call. This is a peer-to-peer media call. So the media is flowing directly from Paul's client to Barat's. And this is voice media enabled via the standard CAL. But then Paul, you know, voice isn't enough. He thinks he's a pretty good-looking guy, and he'd like to be seen. So he adds in video. Never really does answer the question about what this conversation's about, but he just makes the phone call and now adds the video. Again, this peer-to-peer scenario where two folks went from just having a chat, maybe following up to an email, to a voice conversation or video conversation is all part of the standard CAL. So what does all this then have to do with the core CAL? Three things. First, as of August 2011, the Link standard CAL is included in the core CAL suite. So if you own the core CAL suite, you have rights to everything you've just seen. Secondly, as of August 2011, everything that's in standard CAL is included in the core CAL suite. Thirdly, everything, you get the point, right? If you have core CAL, everything that you've seen from group chat to video, even if it's video with federated partners, collaboration with public IM, Yahoo, MSN, AOL, it's there. So the question then becomes, well, we have all this, but I'm not saying this is you per se, but someone is thinking, isn't deploying Link Server hard? I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's video. There's voice. I don't know about that. Not saying that it's me, but the guy I work with can't do it. Right? So this is a question you might have, and it's a fair assessment. I'd like to introduce to you, though, the three tools that are going to make your life simpler with Link deployments. The first is the Link Server Planning Tool. Link Topology Builder is the second, and then finally the Link Server Deployment Wizard. The Link Server Planning Tool is the only 32-bit application that really has anything to do with Link. Also a free download from TechNet. You are able to receive this and essentially create Visio diagrams and start to draft, if you will, your solution for Link. You'll step through some questions. How many users? What sort of modalities would you like to have? You answer some of those questions, it builds you a diagram, and it gives you some hardware requirements. It says you're going to need a server with this many specs, of this much RAM. You're going to need two servers. You're going to need a hardware load balancer. You're going to need some of these DNS or certificate entries, which is a great step forward from OCS R1 and R2, because if you knew anything about those, sometimes the exacts of what you would need might be a little tricky to put your finger on here. Now we have a planning tool that will spell that out for you. The Topology Builder is a tool that will run on a domain-joined machine, and it's going to be a very valuable tool. It's not just for setup. It's for ongoing changes to a Link infrastructure. But what's great is it is an architectural tool, and so while it's not necessarily something that's running live all the time, you are able to look at your live production, make changes, have an architectural team say, is this what we want, before it becomes a reality in production. And then there's the Link Deployment Wizard, which we'll take a very in-depth look at here. The Enterprise CAL? So let's see if we've got time there at the end, but what comes on with Enterprise plus CAL are some collaborative things, being able to set schedule conferences, and of course Enterprise Voice, which is routing things over the PSTN. So this is not me calling you. Sorry about that. Me calling you on Link, this is me calling somebody's cell phone, for example. So I don't want to dive too deep into the other CALs here, because we've got actually a lot to cover is this alarm. This is a very intimidating device here. It looks like it's a Jack Bauer sort of thing. There's buttons and there's a countdown, and it's kind of stressing me out, but I'll be all right. All right, so the first thing you have to do is choose a topology. Standard edition. For those of you that are trying to figure out how do we get Link Server into our environment, Standard Edition is a single server solution. So while there is a back-end database that's always required, in this case it's SQL Express. Supports up to 5,000 users. So that's good news, right? The downside is there's absolutely no availability there. However, for pilots and for single offices where collaborative solutions are incredibly nice to have, incredibly valuable, but it's not the principal form of communication, we still have a phone system, for example, this usually works very well. And so this is a form of Link that can be deployed relatively easily. Secondly, there's a single Enterprise Edition server. where basically we've got a dedicated SQL backend. That's really the distinction. And when we offload the SQL backend to a separate box, our usage capacity increases, right? So in this case, it doubles. So we can support up to 10,000 users on a single link server pointed at a SQL backend somewhere. There's still no high availability here, but it can be added later. And then you could just elect to begin with multiple servers in an enterprise edition pool. Essentially, you've now got more than one link server front end. They're running the link code. There's a SQL backend somewhere. Theoretically, it's maybe clustered for high availability. And we've got load balancers for any of the web services that you may be using. Link no longer requires load balancers for all modalities in the pool, but when it comes to things like web, you can't use DNS load balancing for things like web services. So these are some of the flavors. This is the menu of how will we engage Link in the future here. Now, server requirements. I'm not going to drill down into this too far because it's publicly available. But one of the things we did with Link is we streamlined the server requirements in the sense that they don't differ. And actually, I'm going to take a quick peek at my virtual environment, if that's okay. Started some VMs and applied snapshots here to get back to ground zero. So take all that server requirement stuff in, that riveting information for a moment. So one of the things that we've done is we've made it so that with the exception of a director role, essentially all the servers have the same requirements, right? So if it's a standard edition server you want to do, these are the requirements. If it's a link front end, 10 link front ends, these are the requirements. Very valuable. If it's edge, now we just have to take particular attention down at the bottom to what we require from an interface perspective. And Edge is the link server that sits out there at the internet, maybe in your DMZ, and it allows the AOL, the MSN, the federated partners, and users who take their laptop off-prem, they're at home, they're at Panera, and without a VPN, it's what makes sure that the traffic is secured and that they're able to communicate back into Link. And in that scenario, we're looking for an external interface with 3 IP addresses because we've got some distinct media types that we're sending over and workloads. But from a hardware perspective, what do we need for memory, for processor? It's the same. Big step forward for Link, in case you didn't know, is server virtualization. So in OCS 2007, the virtualization story was no. Some folks tried it, but from a supportability standpoint, you know, the short answer was always no. The long answer was no, right? It wasn't something that we'd support or do. So from a R2 perspective, we allowed you to virtualize the front ends in certain scenarios. Here in Link, it's all virtualized, or it can be, right? So you can virtualize media servers, you can virtualize front ends, you can virtualize mediation servers, you can virtualize your conferencing, you can virtualize your edge, you can virtualize every scenario. A standard edition server, therefore, can be put on a virtual box and support 2,000 users. So if you own or considering CoreCal, you can at least get 2,000 users up and running and all that collaborative stuff with Exchange and SharePoint on a VM and support 2,000 users. If you do an enterprise edition, it's 5,000. And our support is for both Hyper-V and for VMware platforms. Any other hypervisor vendor can go through the SVVP program. It's online. It's one of those open interop things. They run through the steps and they become a qualified supported solution. I will also highlight here the Link virtualization white paper. It is a great read. I forget how many pages it is, but it's pretty specific in the guidance it provides, not just in, hey, what does the host have to look like, but what about the configuration? What about necessarily mixed environments? You can mix physical and virtual. There's some misnomer out there, I think, because the planning tool gives you only 2 choices. That's that free tool I mentioned, it's 32-bit. You download it, and it says if you're going to virtualize it, it sort of assumes everything's virtual. That's an okay assumption, but that's not a requirement, right? So if you wanted to virtualize your front ends but have physical conferencing servers, great. You want to do it the other way around? Great. Our specific call out is that you try not to mix within a given pool, right? So if you have 2 conferencing servers that are going to do all your audio video stuff, you wouldn't try to have one be physical, one virtual. In a Link server pool, we wouldn't say you have 40,000 users, have 3 of the servers be physical and 2 be virtual. We try not to mix it up in that regard. But within a particular pool set, absolutely, it can be all one or the other, and it can be different later on someplace else in the topology. Can you say that again? Yes, so the question was, is there a requirement for Hyper-V and the R2 version specifically? And the answer is yes. We do have on the Hyper-V end a requirement that you're using the R2. All right, so these are, now we're going to start getting into some details here. This is the link server deployment process. We've got the planning tool mentioned. We've got some AD processes. You even see the install topology builder bit there. So we're starting to use topology builder there on the left and making our way down to the point where we publish a topology. What the heck does that even mean? Maybe you don't know. We're going to take a look at that. And then we kind of start connecting over to SQL backends and link server systems. And I don't know, but I told you this was going to be a relatively simple and easy thing. So I'm assuming somebody's looking at this saying, dude, I thought this was supposed to be simple. And yeah, this is my Miss Cleo moment, right? I know what you're thinking, right? You're thinking he lied. And it's a little bit true, right? Because it does look hard in that scenario. But what I'd like to give you is a different picture, because we're going to leverage the tools that Link provides. Here's an overview of the Link deployment process. Essentially, you're going to prepare infrastructure. You're going to then create a topology. So prepare infrastructure is, yes, let's make sure Active Directory is prepped and ready to go. Then we're going to create a topology, which means you've decided, am I going to do standard edition or am I going to do enterprise edition? And you're going to then create that within Link. So Link knows, here's my plan. Here are the servers, the type, the shape of my Link server deployment. You publish that topology, and we'll talk a little bit about what that means, and then actually deploy the Link servers. That does look a whole lot simpler, doesn't it? That's because the magic of all those little arrows and steps is actually happening on the back end. So we're going to take a look, a little bit of this now here, and prepare the infrastructure process. So in the beginning, there was AD. And therefore, we had domain join systems. And one of the keys to understand here is that AD setup now in Link can begin from a domain join system. It does not have to be on your schema master. It does not have to be on a domain controller. In these particular scenarios, Link is far and away a step forward for us. Now, there are, you know, if you have experiences with OCS, I apologize. There were some versions where you had to actually be on in the data center in a certain proximity facing west or something in order to make the schema extensions and the domain preps work. This scenario is not the case. Now, we're going to jump over and take a look at our tools here. And get a look at what's actually happening on a front end right now as soon as it's done restarting. And the reason it's not restarted yet is because I forgot to. So as we step forward from the AD setup process, one of the next things we're going to have to do is install Topology Builder. Now, I want to be very clear about what's happening in AD setup and what's not. What's happening in AD setup are things like schema extensions, creation of universal groups, and then we're going to have ACEs, ACLs defined. So this is not about deploying servers into Active Directory yet. As soon as this VM starts, we're going to see this in action. I'm reminded of my first presentation. Manager tried to offer me some very encouraging words and said, you know, some presentations make or break a career. He's like, hey, I just want you to know this isn't one of them. I thought, wow, this guy's actually pretty good. Thank you. He's like, yeah, because if this goes bad, you won't have one. I was like, it wasn't exactly what I was looking to hear, but I didn't hear that in this presentation, though. Not that the bar is set low. I'm just trying to clarify my headspace. Go ahead.
While you're waiting for the question, I think.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that with Workout, you can federate, or you can include compensate with a AOL
No. All right, so Link, from a contact perspective, Link is not going to just auto-import this stuff from Facebook. Any of those contacts will not show up. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to get over to, I've got a front end up and running, and I'm going to switch over to this here just as soon as I ensure each of these services is up as they are supposed to be. Let's see. Any other questions while we're waiting for me to do my thing here? It will be, if it's not yet. The question was, will this presentation be on MyTechEd? And the answer absolutely will be yes. That's correct. When we virtualize, we do have the capacity. A lot of that has to do with real-time collaborative solutions, right? So when you're escalating from IM to audio and then throwing in video, we like to ensure that we can not only monitor but manage that transition, that escalation process. It has to be very fast, very smooth, seamless. And when it comes to virtualized NICs and things like that, we just see our experiences. It tests better at a lower capacity. I'm not even sure who I was talking to. I may have been making eye contact with the wrong person, so sorry, that was weird. So we've got some some changes in guidance around conferencing that are certainly worth read. If you're in physical, what you can consume for or what you can have for a conference, that attendee is now up to in a large pool scenario, a certain type of deployment, you could have up to 1,000 conference attendees in a single meeting. Virtualized, everything drops in half. So that's correct. You go from 250 to 125. But remember, in standard Cal, you're not the initiator of a conference. You can consume it. So there'd have to be some folks with a higher Cal that are able to schedule those meetings, and then folks can absolutely join. But in an environment that's purely standard or core Cal, what you'd be talking about is simply being able to collaborate more effectively between each other. For Link? No. No, Link can absolutely stand by itself, but what you wouldn't get are things like calendaring features and that sort of function. You'd want, if you want to have Link automatically know I'm in a meeting, Link will have to know what is this meeting source, and it's going to look for Exchange Free Busy data there. I will not be covering archiving. I will, into the topology, I will set an archiving server, but I will not be able to deploy one here. I will reference the back end door. We'd like to think so. I'm not sure. Maybe we can talk afterwards because I'm going to run out of time to actually be able to get this done. That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. They have? Okay. So the question was, when are the hands-on labs going to be available? I don't know. After this, I'll be down at the Link booth, and I'll try to have an answer for you there. There we go. So hang on just a second here. Let me switch you out to where we want to be. All right, so here we are. This is my VM host. This is running on my laptop. So I've got a SQL backend, a front end, a DC, and a client. Now, if I step over to the front end, you'll notice we don't see Link. All right, so Link is not actually deployed at this point. So what we'll have to do is get into the actual media itself. What I just skipped over are the MSIs for the actual clients. Everything in Link is 64-bit except for the planning tool, just so you know. All right, I'm going to launch setup.exe and minimize this window. So granted, for some of you who have already seen this, I guess if you've done a lot of Link installs, this might be about as fun as scratching your eye with a stick. I do think, though, that it's worth stepping through the process and thinking, hey, this isn't how I remember it, or what if we want to do archiving or something along those lines. So right now, what's actually going to get installed are the bits to the Link server, the ability to now run Topology Builder, the ability to run the deployment wizard. These are the tools that are going to make our lives much, much simpler. The only way we're actually able to achieve what A key thing, though, to understand is that we're going to be doing this on the front end. So this is not the domain controller, okay? So this is a valuable thing to remember in deployment, especially if you have a strong security department or an AD team that wants to see things happen in very consolidated areas, right? So your SQL guys take care of SQL, AD takes care of AD, and they'd like to see every process in between. I'm accepting the licensing agreement because it'd just be really awkward if I didn't. And we're moving forward here with this, with the install. So the reason I want to start with literally nothing and step through this is because I think it's valuable to understand that these tools actually work and do allow you to get from nowhere to someplace pretty quickly. Now, this is my DC that I just switched over to. I have Exchange running here. I do not have a SharePoint integration, a SharePoint server, because my laptop would barf in technical terms. There's a TechNet article on that. But we are going to be able to provision a user and ensure all of this works as expected. So Link Server is kicking off now the deployment wizard. And you'll notice the first thing that we're going to see is, hey, prepare Active Directory. It's way up here at the top. On the right, I have this option, I think, right, to prepare first standard edition server, because that's just what we want to do. But it's grayed out. Why? Because Active Directory know nothing about Link at this point. You can't do it. Not allowed. We have to start here. So part of what the deployment wizard does is it prevents you from getting ahead of yourself and moving too far into your deployment before the rest of your infrastructure is ready. And here's an alarm about licensing. 0 days remaining. Let's see how far that works. So prepare Active Directory. Again, I'm on the front end. The DC's back here. I'm doing AD work here. I'm determining the deployment state, assuming my DNS is functional and this VM started as it was supposed to. I should be able to see a deployment state from here, and I do. So Link Server, when we clicked prepare Active Directory, we were determining deployment state. Now Link Server has gone out and said, hey, what do I see in AD? Do I see the schema attributes as a first off? The answer is no. So now we're back here, and we have a list of steps we can run through. But again, notice, you can't jump down to schema partitions, to current domain prep, to forest prep. You can't do any of this until you go through the first step. So you can't get ahead of yourself here, which is great. So I'm going to go ahead and click Run for Prepare Schema. And now, from the Link front-end server, we are going to make the changes to the schema that have to be made to support Link Server. I do have a slide here I'm going to jump to just so you understand. That's not the smoothest way to jump. What is a faster way? Here we go. So I want you to see this here. This is command line data, right? This is PowerShell stuff, how you're going to achieve certain elements of change from the Active Directory perspective from within the Link server. Now, I don't want you to memorize this, and there's no quiz at the end, but the value here is that these things do exist, and if you jump back to the actual deployment wizard, you see it's doing it for you. We're calling the commandlets and the PowerShell commandlets to make the same changes. So to distill that, those of you who like the GUI, you have the ability to just say, I don't understand PowerShell to that degree. I'm not looking to target specific servers and have a bunch of parameters and long run-on sentences of PowerShell scripting. I would like to extend my schema. And the word next and a button would be awesome. This is here for you. However, all it's doing is calling the PowerShell. Which means if you're somebody who likes the code, who wants to extend those things manually, give yourself a hug. It's okay. It's still there. So you'll have that ability. And in many respects, we have customers who may say, I need the AD guys to do this specifically. And they always want it to be a script, and they do it process. That's fine. We can accommodate that, absolutely. Right now, my laptop's trying to accommodate me. And so it's going to take a little bit longer. I had the choice to make, do I video all this, and I do have videos of me going through the deployment process and just click and watch the video. To me, that's incredibly underwhelming. But the trade-off is you get to sit and watch a laptop think, right? So this first task here usually is the one that takes the longest, and then afterwards we're back in business. So I'm going to switch back to the PowerPoint slide, make a little bit of progress here while that's going. So we talked about how there's AD. We talked about the AD setup process, which, of course, as soon as I did that, now it's done, right? Let me jump back here. So I hope that I'm going to get a little bit of grace for walking through this, because I think that would be a little better than I was like, hey, look away, close your eyes, and boom, here's a link, right? But there is going to be a little bit of this lag here that we have to accept, right? So you notice now I've got a complete from the prepare schema. So if I were to walk away, if my machine were to die, if I just got tired of waiting, ordered pizza, whatever, the phone rang, I come back, I know where I left off. It's not an incredibly difficult tool to manage here. So we understand we're done preparing the schema. We're now able to press forward into the next step, which is preparing the forest. We're going to prepare the local domain, contoso.com, Contoso, Fabricam. Huge competitors in the space of non-existence, and local domain is what we're deploying to because that's ultimately all I have. So we've prepared the forest, and that was infinitely faster. We could also view the log, and depending on what stage of the deployment you're at, you'll get varying degrees of detail. And you have to enable the XML reading there and Internet Explorer, but it's a helpful tool if something goes bump and you want to know how, where, why. Some of the debug there is right there in the tool. You don't have to go to a separate tool. The deployment wizard will simply show you, hey, here's the log for that. And we're going to prepare the current domain now. Again, this is all about the PowerShell commandlets, right? And we have here, hey, we ran that enable CSAD domain, and it's successful. We could view the log to get into some of the details here. Let's go ahead and do that. All right, so here are some of the steps that have taken place. Again, when you have a different level of deployment process, maybe when we're starting services, you're starting to build out the components for conferencing, and a particular function fails or were to fail, the log here would tell you why. Hey, maybe this server does not have this component installed, something along those lines. I will say this, that the deployment wizard first, of course, checks that you actually have the things on the server to run these tools, right? So whether it's a certain level of a .NET, it's very, very clever and very effective at communicating these things to you. So believe it or not here, we've just gone through everything in prepare Active Directory. And now we see prepare Active Directory is complete. So when we go back to this scary looking thing, there was only one box for AD setup, but AD setup brings up a host, depending on your previous experiences. I say, hey, you just have to do AD prep stuff, and you know, all the voices in your head start talking at the same time. Bad experiences, things went wrong, I remember when. And what actually is happening here is what you just saw. We've extended the schema, created some groups, some universal groups. We've done a little bit of work, but we did it from a domain join system, so you can tell your AD guys we didn't touch their DCs and have to run bits there. The next step is to install Topology Builder according to this, right? And what we're going to do is that same thing. Now, I am going to skip the planning tool, because that would take a lot more time. But I do want you to know the planning tool, which is that free 32-bit application that kind of lets you figure some things out if you're not sure what flavors or what hardware you need to support what functions. If you run the planning tool, you can actually take what's in the planning tool, save it into a topology that you can import into Topology Builder. We're going to just do a raw topology here in just a moment, but you could actually leverage the tool that you were kind of poking around with to say, all right, I actually think this is what I want. And then you can bring that into Topology Builder and begin that way. So what we're going to do is go back here to our deployment, and we're going to install Topology Builder. And while that's baking, it's kind of like a cooking show, right? I've set this to 350. It's going to simmer for a little bit here. We're going to come over here and talk about authoring your desired topology and publishing the topology. So I'm going to have to multitask a little bit here, but I will bring you back to see that the task is completed successfully. If not, I won't bring you back until I fixed it, and then you'll never know the difference. So after we've installed Topology Builder, we're going to author a topology, which essentially means what components do we want? Do we want one front end? Do we want two front ends? One key thing you'll notice, and you have to remember this, is everything in Topology Builder is about an FQDN, which is, of course, TechEd. You guys know this, 300-level class. The reason for that is when we publish a topology, all servers that run the link components are going to say, who am I? They have something of an identity crisis, and it's a good thing. Before they install any link roles, even though you're running the install bits right there, they stop and say, here's my FQDN, Here's what's in the topology. Am I even a link server? I mean, I know you're running this on me, but did you just have like a, you know, a senior moment? Did you just, you know, kind of space out and you put the disk in the wrong server? It will tell you I am a link server, and I'm supposed to be, per your planning topology, an AV server, a front end, a standard edition server. This is the value of the topology builder. Once you, from an architectural team, this topology is set. This, only the servers that home those roles, that are intended for those functions, will actually get those bits. So we're going to actually start the install for topology builder finished, and I'm going to kick that off right now. We've got link server here. I've got control panel. That won't go anywhere yet because we haven't deployed any link bits, but I have link server topology builder. And so we're going to start that off. Was there a question, by the way? I thought I heard a murmuring, but from a topology, does everybody follow the bit there where, hey, the server FQDN matters a lot? And do you understand that connection there? Yeah, I hope so, because I don't really have another way to say it, and I would say the same thing again. All right, so here we have the option now in topology builder. We can download a topology from an existing deployment. We can open topology from a local file, or we can create a new one. And so downloading from an existing deployment is, hey, we're installing it here to this particular computer, but Link is up and running. We just want to get a chance to look at a particular document, right? So we need to name this, and so we'll call this Contoso topology. I can barely type because it's so cold in here. I don't know if that's like an attendee request to have the temperature be at like penguin level, but it's messing me up. Contoso.com. So you got to set a SIP domain, right? So that's pretty easy stuff. Topology Builder starts off saying you want to do SIP, but hey, how are you going to do this specifically, right? Contoso domain. I'm not configuring additional SIP domains, but if you had them in your organization, multiple domains where some folks are Contoso, some are Fabricam, you would think could think of a different domain name than those two, but you could configure those here. All right, so central site, we need to have a site. In Link, everything is based on sites. These are not the Active Directory sites. There are Link sites. Important to know. And then description, we're just going to say US main office. So do not expect Link to look into Active Directory and create a topology based on AD sites and services. That's not what happens. Hang on just a second, because you would think I could type and take your question at the same time, but I would inevitably type your question. All right, so I have just defined a high-level SIP RA. I've got at least one central site. Here's my SIP domain, and we should probably talk about front ends. And so Link says, yeah, we probably should. Let me help you down that road. We're going to define a front-end pool right now. Go ahead with your question. No, you would actually give the same SIP domain name. So if you're migrating from OCS or R2, you would actually SIP servers actually know how to talk to each other, and clients via AutoDiscover can end up at the right place. So it's not migrate. There's an entire coexistence strategy. This is actually a lab that I use for coexistence, and so there are a few records I'm going to have to get out of the way if I haven't already. But there's an entire migration strategy, and we can talk more about that at the booth. There's also a lab, I believe, on migrating from R2 to Link whenever this lab is built. Enterprise edition front-end pool. So I'm not going to do standard edition here, right? Because that would be a little bit, come on, dude. So we're going to have lspool01.contoso.com. All right, so we're going to I've defined the FQDN of the pool. This is important. It says, great, I want at least one server that is going to be in this pool. So I'm going to say this one, this front-end. Now, if I specified a different front-end, when it came time to actually deploy bits, the server would not do it. The wizard would start, it would fail. Not with an error, just say, yeah, I don't own any roles in Link, so there's nothing for me to deploy here. But I'm specifying this front end explicitly so that won't happen, and I can proceed with my demo and not look foolish. We're going to select some features here. Do you want to do some conferencing, including audio, video, app sharing? Do you want to do some enterprise voice? What about call emission control? Dial-in conferencing, I'm trying to click that there. So there's a variety of things here that we can elect to do. And I'm just going to go ahead and collect them all. What about mediation server? Do we want to co-locate it? In other words, do we want it all to run on this one front end? Well, hey, maybe we're only talking about 5,000 users or 7,000 users. Absolutely, then. We can do up to 10,000 users on a single front end. And we're going to do the audio-video conferencing service here as well. just so you could see it. Somebody had a question about archiving. So here I can choose to enable archiving and monitoring and even edge if that's what this particular server is going to do. Now, I'm not going to set that up at this point, but I am going to do archiving and monitoring. Define a SQL store. Now, at this point, we have to come back over here so you understand why I'm being asked this question. Link, when we're authoring the topology, doesn't do anything with SQL. The point at which it publishes the topology, it does. The one thing this deployment wizard does not do for you is build SQL servers. But if they're configured, you can ask Link to find, establish shares, instances, and be able to leverage those for Link, even if it's for not just the simple pool or front end, but for archiving, for monitoring. So you can get that level of detail here in the deployment. And that's actually what we're going to do. And what's important to know is when we actually begin to publish the topology, the first pool is the one that receives something called the Central Management Store, CMS. CMS is huge. And what I want to do is I'm going to describe CMS and how it's important, because it's how Link gets away from heavy reliance upon Active Directory, especially in situations where high availability is required or people are using enterprise voice. You need to be able to use the communication features if Active Directory is not available, if it's a branch office without domain controllers. And so the CMS is how we do this. And by default, the CMS is installed in the first Link pool that's deployed. So in this particular case, we need to be able to get to the point where we're setting up a SQL instance here. So let me make sure my SQL server is started. All right, so. Oh, you should probably see this, yeah? What's going on here? Two. All right, so we're going to define some of this here. Right, so I've just typed in, sorry, behind the curtain there, the SQL server that exists. So if over here in my VMs, did I actually start that one? Ooh. That would have been the start of an epic failure. Link is very effective, though, letting you know, can't reach that, can't touch that. So in this particular case, we would have been fine because we're still in Topology Builder. When we went to publish the topology, we would have failed. And it would simply would have said, store is not accessible, could not install CMS. But I'm going to spare you that agony and actually catch the mistake before I see it through. We get to name the instance, right? So in this case, we'll do something LS2010. All right, so now we've got SQL Server, a SQL Server specified by FQDN. We've got a SQL instance that we're targeting, and we're telling Link, when you go publish this topology, that's where I want you to put this stuff. We need to define a new file share. So, I'm lazy. So, .com, so we'll do file share name will be file share, something really hard to guess. File shares are going to be used for a variety of things within Link. Meeting content, for example, is one thing. What's that? So I knew the answer to that in R2 was yes, and I believe it's still yes that you can do that. External base URL, but let's chat that. The question was about whether or not you can use a DFS namespace. I know when it comes to conferencing materials, that there's a dialogue to be had there about what sort of material you want to have on DFS, especially since things change and Link dynamically, right, like conferencing material. All right, so we have an external base URL. Hey, if we want to have people being able to connect, and so I'm going to change this name to, I want a distinct URL. I don't want people to see my pool name from the outside, so I'll do web external or webext. Webext. You heard the T, right? Okay. And I'm going to add a gateway. Let's pretend that there was a PSTN gateway here that we wanted to talk to. All right, this is not specific to standard Cal, but hey, you know, you're here. Let's talk about this. I'm going to make an IP address. I hope that that's not in use. That would be really strange if it was. So here in Topology Builder, I'm saying, hey, I've got this gateway that I'd like you to talk to sometime in the future. This is where you define it. And you basically specify the port, the IP, the protocol. In this case, we're doing TCP. We're assuming this other gateway can't do the encrypted traffic. We can, but for whatever reason, they can't. That's fine. All right, archiving server. Drop-down box says, yeah, there isn't one defined yet. But we're going to say, no, we are going to have a new archiving server, lsarcmon.contoso.com. What's that? Ah, well, thank you very much. Now, in this particular case, though, since we're defining it, so what she did to help me out here is make sure that my typing matched my words, but this server doesn't exist. However, if a server, if I deployed lsarcmon.contoso.com into our domain, ran the wizard, and the topology was looking for LA, would anything get installed? No, and I'd have to go in and change the topology. So I guess we're saying, you know, spelling does count. SQL store here for archiving. We've already got a previously defined store, so I can just say go ahead and use that one. Same thing for the file shares for archiving. And so here I've defined a whole bunch of things, not just that there will be link function, but that there's going to be archiving and different types of monitoring as well. And that was a very simple and straightforward thing to do. Monitoring, same story. I just have to define what's this the FQDN of the server going to be. Link. The topology builder is going to ask the same questions. Okay, so where are you going to have some of these things, these components live? And it's just, it's looking for FQDNs. It wants to know what shares, what servers, and it will deal with ensuring that when those servers come up with the bits, the right role is installed. Your archiving server won't suddenly become a front end because you weren't paying attention. Topology builder is the guide that says, no, you don't get to take on that role. Your administrator is not allowed that, has not specified that. So here we have a view of topology builder with our stuff in it. And this is pretty cool. If you've noticed or if you've been ever able to see OCS R2, here we've got this tree here that's somewhat familiar. And so we see that we've got no standard edition servers, but we do have an enterprise edition pool, right? We can see the front end server that's supposed to be part of that pool. We can see it's FQDN. We can see that, hey, when it comes to conferencing, we're going to use that pool. We can even see our SQL stores. But here's what's great. None of this has actually been taking place. None of this has actually been pressed anywhere or published anywhere. We need to do that right now before we run out of time. So you'll notice here in the SQL store, we're able to see all the things we've defined for that SQL box. We're not on SQL, but we are already speaking about what we're going to use it for. And so on the topology builder, we're going to take the time to, now that we're done, to click Publish Topology. And at this point, SQL would have to be accessible. And while that's gonna have to bake for just a little bit here, we're going to jump back to the deck here and make sure that we understand how we got to the SQL backend. So SQL databases are set up. This is all going to take place through the publishing of topology. Again, we're not setting up the SQL server. If it's not there, no soup for you, right? But we're assuming that those things have been taken care of. And so when the CMS is installed, and CMS will then be able to be referenceable from all other link server systems we deploy. Now, CMS, what is it? CMS is a database. Give me just a second here. CMS is a database that basically is a collection of XML files. And what they do is they describe not just server configuration, but users as well. This takes us away from having to look at Active Directory for all of that. So Active Directory, we absolutely have to have your user object defined. You know, you'd have a SIP URI. But what type of policies you had, what sort of privileges you had, a dial plan if we're talking about voice, but what pools you're homed on, those sort of things are accessible from within CMS. And that's an incredible value because now we're able to say, we're doing this work within Link, and we can replicate it. And we're not placing that load on Active Directory. We're not placing that dependency on Active Directory. If AD is not accessible, Link, in many scenarios, will simply still function. And when servers need to stand up their new services, they look at the CMS database. They don't look to Active Directory. So what we're going to be doing now, oh, sorry, you had a question? The first database that you go to, no, oh, the first, I see what you're saying. Yeah, the question was, is the first site you install automatically a central site? If the topology that you publish does not have more than one site, then the answer is yes. You can't start off with a branch site. But if you had multiple sites, you would, in Topology Builder, be able to establish a particular server as your CMS, and maybe that's not deployed. I'd have to think about if you could choose to target a different for CMS. But wherever the one law, absolute law, is wherever CMS, wherever your first link pool is, that's where CMS by default is placed. All right. Just going back so you guys can see what's happening in publishing progress. We are moving along, publishing this topology out to the SQL store that we specified. So it's cooking. It's just taking a little bit longer than ideal. But let's plow ahead here. All right, so our next step is going to be to install the core setup files for Link on a particular server. So at that point, we're basically going to retrieve a topology. But we're not going to. The wizard's going to do it for us. So when we get to the point where the CMS is actually published, Link server, Deployment Wizard will simply run and take a look at the server it's running on, look at the FQDN, and then look at your topology. It's going to do this via a service connection point that's in Active Directory. It's going to be able to say, here's a CMS I need to talk to. Who am I? What roles do I get? And then it's going to deploy those. After it retrieves the topology, which it gets from SQL, it installs the components. We're able to activate services and then move to secure certificates, which, again, are enabled via the deployment wizard. So if you've had previous experiences with LCS, OCS, certificates can be a little bit challenging at times. They are far simpler to manage, to deploy, and to request here in Link. And I want you to just pay a little bit careful attention here because certificate maintenance, that arrow that popped up there at the bottom for that purple box, is because when you change or have to reissue certificates, you can always come back and do it through the deployment wizard. All right, so you can come back and manage it here. Also, you have the ability to add and remove core services again. That might be a repeated process, right? Maybe we're starting off with just IAM, we're not doing the conferencing here, or we are going to change where conferencing is deployed, and we're going to add and remove components. You can come back to the wizard to do that and change that within your topology. If required. So you'll notice over on the left, we've got the published topology and author topology. There's now a little blue arrow that goes back. You may make changes to your topology, and the wise thing to do is always to use the tools, and you'll have to publish those topology changes before your Link servers would then accept new roles, new bits, new architecture. All right, so we've moved through a whole bunch of this, and right now we are at deploy a topology. All right, so right now we've got a topology deployed. This is accessible now. We have a lot of these services up and running. One thing that we're probably going to need to do is jump over to a domain controller and make sure that from an AD perspective, the account that I'm going to use to deploy the Link bits actually has the privileges, right? So role-based access control is here in Link, and so we have specific roles. There's an administrator that's kind of global. We have help desk roles, response group admins for people who manage sort of hunt groups and answering desks, voice administrators. So we're going to just make sure here that the administrator for Contoso has the rights to deploy what they need to for Link. And since that's done, you know what else we're going to probably do? We're going to step into DNS, make sure we've got a few things defined here. Link does not auto-publish into DNS, so if we want to place our pool name, lspool01, and IP address it to our front end, this is the place and the time to do it. And I'm relatively sure. Let's see that. Great. We'd also want to add our WebEx and dial-in as well. Here we're going to add an SRV record. If you had a particular deployment already, you may have an SRV already for the gentleman who's asking about OCS. So here we're going to have to do, for those of you who are familiar with OCS, this is familiar. What I'm essentially doing is ensuring that a Link server and Link Server clients are able to find their way via TLS to the pool, right? So when we have clients that come up and they want to do some sort of auto configuration, they're going to look for an internal SRV record that will point them to the servers that are hosting the service. So we've published the topology, so let's get back then to installing some components here. So now we're back on the front end, all right? So we've got the DNS server behind us, I mean the AD server behind us. All we can do is install some local configuration materials here, right? So we're going to go ahead and just kick that off and tell basically this server, go talk to the topology, grab that topology, figure out what you're supposed to do here in Link, and make sure all of that happens. So we're going to give that wizard some time to bake and come over here and make sure we've answered some of these other bits here. So you've seen Topology Builder. We're now at the part where we're deploying wizards. There's no great way to go back and forth and order these demo slides here. But I do want to talk about some of the optional components that were mentioned while this is cooking here. Monitoring server. Monitoring server is going to provide you some statistics, some reporting, some dashboards about what the experience is like. You initiate a peer-to-peer call to another user. Then that call doesn't go the way you liked. You thought it sounded funny. This is possible with standard CAL, right? A peer-to-peer audio call. They call the help desk. How do they actually determine whether or not the call was went bad because of the network or devices? Monitoring servers. What does that provides that service? So collects detailed records, lets you know about who talked to who, and does give you some ability to know how the conversation went. It can be co-located with some other roles. All of this is published on TechNet, but I just want to make sure you understand this is something that's absolutely available to you for use of standard CAL. Archiving server. Again, these are roles. The only role in the Link that you know we license is the front-end server. So if you deploy an archiving server, you can collect some of this IM content, right? You can have some of these conversations around compliance and regulatory requirements here. And it's also stored on a SQL server. It also can be co-located, such as with monitoring server. Edge server enables remote usage. People who are taking their laptop at home to Panera, they travel, they want to be able to connect to Link, maybe without a VPN. That's what Edge is here for. It also enables the federation between two organizations and public IM connectivity. And a single Edge server can host all the Edge roles. So that's changed from version to version. Here in Link, all the roles can live on one server. So you deploy one Edge server, you've got web conferencing Edge, audio video conferencing Edge, and our SIP and IM. And then the director role, again, also available for you for deployments. This is usually recommended if you have lots of multiple pools and a global deployment, or if specifically you're doing Edge. And then, of course, there's group chat, which we took a look at before. That does require a dedicated client and, SQL store. All right, let's get back here to our baking here. So we have deployed some core components here. Now, that just means the bits are here on the server, all right? So we're going to do some, we're going to run the setup and remove components actual wizard. We're checking some prerequisites. We're going to validate who we are as a server. The server's having this dialogue now with the Link deployment wizard, trying to say, hey, based on this copy of the topology you just made me go out and get, I think I'm this. Am I? They're going to have a conversation about that, and if so, it's going to start to write some of those components into the application base at the server. How many of you have actually made it down to the Link kiosk? Okay. Is there anybody who's never seen Link demoed in terms of here's an IM, here's a voice call, any of that stuff? Got a few folks who haven't seen that, huh? Let's see if I've got a separate client here. This is not within a VM because you can't, you know, leverage the Wi-Fi here. But let's see here. Oh, of course, Tylee's in a conference call. Do you? While that's baking, we're going to see if we can show you something here. Now we're down to the last wire here, and I want to make sure you get to see as much as you can here while this deployment's actually running. So we'll wait for Ty to actually respond. Unfortunately, Ty is probably just walked away from a demo. There's a SIP standard that absolutely we're following. SIP is one of those interesting technologies. There are some different flavors that people, that different vendors have. But, you know, there's some pretty strong RFCs that define SIP. And we've actually helped to collaborate and really crystallize those. So I was hoping that that person would respond back, and unfortunately that's not happening. All right, hey, whoo! All right, so let's see something here. So, Ty, I can't speak of Ty, would like to call, okay? And I'm calling Ty because she looked like an interesting person to talk to. Ty is actually down in the kiosk. Go ahead, all right, so we're going to make a call here. Oh, get off your thing. Do my audio device. No, don't do that. Don't do that. There we go. Do that. Let's try that again.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I am well, Ty. Would you mind if I add in some video? Okay, so rather than just talk to Ty, I'd like to see Ty. Right now I see, okay, Ty. The camera's, you look different. No, it doesn't help, the camera's actually been quite damaging to you right now. So you hear me, you see me, right? We all see Ty, or this imposter's Ty. This was just springboarded right from Link. One of the things that would probably be even more impressive for you guys to see here, not that this representative of Ty is not impressive to look at, but if I were to come over here to Link and say, I'm going to search for some folks maybe in finance specifically and do a skill search, I'm now, while this is running here in the background, able to say, okay, here are some folks. Does anybody know where this data is coming from right now? Some from Exchange, but look at this down here. Let's view some results in SharePoint. All right, so now we're actually able to take a look at SharePoint, and I should probably let Ty go before she gets very confused and bored. Thank you for jumping in there. But now we've got some representation here in SharePoint. We can see status for Michael. We can initiate a call to Michael. This is the same thing that was accessible also if we were back here at Ty's. We could actually just view, just choose to click on her icon, her photo, and we'd end up taking a look at her My Site. So absolutely, this integration is here for you. Unfortunately, right now, we're still installing a whole lot of language pack materials. I got started on this a little bit later, and the red light is flashing to let me know in about 40 seconds something horribly bad happens, or maybe already did. But are there any, as this is getting running here, does anybody have any final questions before you take off? Obviously, all right, so because of where we're at in time, here's what I'd like. You come on up here. I'll make sure I answer this question. If anybody wants to see this continue to bake, we're just going to let it sit here, and you'll see the services start up here in just a moment. Thanks.